And we're back with the Philip Duff Show, the second in our three-episode series focusing on agave. And we have none other than famed world traveler, excellent dancer, tequila process engineer and brand owner, Sophie Dekobek here. The most important thing is it's like 5 p.m. in Jalisco right now. Do you have a drink or like what's going on there?
Yes, obviously. Look, I took some good stock with me.
Oh, good. What do you got there?
Yeah, so if we speak for 23 hours, I'm ready for that.
Okay, well, we do like to go long. 23 hours seems like a lot, but I actually have a little bit of Excelia tequila here.
Very good. Very good choice.
Which is hard to find anymore in New York City, but there's actually some at the liquor store only four blocks from my apartment.
Very nice. So then I will make cheers with you with a very special sample of single barrel extra Añejo, 6 years old, that we just dumped from barrel last Friday.
Is this stuff that was a Calvados barrel?
There's two different projects that we have dumped on a Friday. There was five barrels of extra Añejo, 6 years old, in ex-Jack Daniel barrels, and these two beautiful ex-Calvados barrels from Christian Drouin. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, they all smell amazing, to be honest. Well, we've been obviously tasting them from time to time to make sure they were as wow as we wanted them to be. So it was their time to be dumped. And now their life will, you know, be still to rest in, you know, before being bottled. And then, yeah, shared with the world.
Well, santé, as they say in your country, or cheers, yes, as they say in mine.
And salud, Mexico, and thank you so much for this invitation. Mm.
The whole idea of this, actually, Sophie, was that there's a new edition of the book, The Tequila Ambassador, coming out after 14 years. And in a very hilarious example of the world going full circle, a PR company in New York City reached out and asked if I'd interview Jesse Estes and Phil Bailey and Mitch Wilson for the book. And I had no idea that I know them or that I knew Tomas or that I know Carlos Camarena. And then I had the idea to do a couple of other podcasts in the field of agave. So along with you, I spent a long time talking to, do you know Danielle Tataran, who lives in Zipolite on the coast? She's a Canadian lady. She used to work at Acre in Cabo San Lucas.
Oh, that's a place I would love to go more often, to be honest. And, you know, when you live in a country, it's when you do travel the less. Oh, so I think I've been towards that area of Mexico maybe 15 years ago. Wow. So no, I will need to do a visit. And if it's, I do, I'm sure it's a great person to meet. So please tell me more.
No, she does the most amazing private bottlings of incredible mezcal and right, destilado de agave, sometimes as little as 40 liters. But everyone can listen to the other episode. This episode is about you. So, Sophie, if you could explain in, 1 minute or less, how you came to be a rugby-playing engineering student in France to studying agave as a plant in South Africa. And then now you are essentially a Mexican woman. You live there, family, kids, business, and your own brand.
And a dog, a Mexican dog.
Oh, there's a dog as well. That's more of a commitment than the kids.
Exactly. Well, yeah, I found the hair in La Copia when I was with Don Javier. So 10 years ago, and from there, yes. So yes, it's a big journey. So how comes? Well, I would say sometimes, you know, I love the word serendipity. I think it's we all have these like roads in our lives where if we have an opportunity, we take it. It brings us to new passes that we would never have imagined before. So obviously, being French, I was not supposed to Because you know, Mexican tequila producer, I can say it like this, or as a dear friend called me, a Frexican, like a French chicken.
That's brilliant.
Yes, so yeah, and it fits. I accept that that word. So it has been accepting maybe challenges. So as you mentioned, when I had my engineer diploma, I did accept that work in South Africa. So I was going to go in a city where there was no for other foreign people. So I was the only foreign person in a city of 80,000 people, 80,000 South African, 10 years only after apartheid. So it was, yeah, a tough condition. But that said, fantastic experience, because I was then, I had the hand free to experiment in fermentation, in distillation, and that has been a very starting point, a tipping point to it. Because from there, another tipping point was to meet Julio Bermejo. And he would never, you know, he's so humble, such an amazing person, that he would never mention the, you know, all the world that he's knowing and how he's recognized for tequila. And he came at the distillery just saying that his parents have a Mexican restaurant in San Francisco and that he's passionate about agave. And if he could come to visit the distillery, so I was, we've never received anyone, but of course, come whenever you want, I'm here every day. And so we had an amazing time together, and he would never still say more, you know. And just said, if you come to the US, just advise me. And in 2001, it comes that I was in San Francisco, and thanks to him, could discover the world of bartender, of cocktails, and more than anything, seeing an industry super like we were just doing, having a glass in our hands, smelling it, and, you know, having like a field in mind, like an imagination opening. So either you drink it straight, you're sipping it and you're enjoying all the flavors, or as a bartender, you are going to create cocktails. And for me, it has been so amazing to see that, because then it was like, okay, this is possible in this world to follow what you feel, what you taste, what you want to do, because there's really people that will, you know, enjoy it, accept it. It's not only this business world that at that point, maybe I was seeing like only these big brands, because remember at that time there was no craft spirit. So I thought, you know, okay, the spirit industry is about big brands and big money players. And when I saw that, you know, it was still not in my mind to do a brand, but it was just like, wow, there's passionate people around there. And when I came back then to Mexico, because some people were asking me about tequila, and in South Africa, we were doing agave spirit, so not the same denomination of origin. So as I loved Mexico, because I did my work in a research center before finishing my studies, coming back a little bit before in time. Uh-huh. So I knew Mexico, I knew the language, I loved the country. I went to visit a distillery by curiosity. I fall in love with the agave flavor. So obviously, when someone said, I would love you to do like some consultancy on tequila, it was like a yes. So I thought to go there for 6 months. And next week, my company in Mexico will turn 21 years. So you could see that my 6 months it was really approximative, you know. So I came back to Mexico and worked into production, did some samples, did some experiments, until some people from the industry tasted it and said, Sophie, you have to do a brand with that. It's beautiful. And as I never had since day one, my parents didn't give me one pesos to start. I reinvested everything I earned in South Africa. And I still don't have any partners or investors. Partners I would have loved maybe during the time to have a business partner, but it didn't happen. And now I think it's too much Sophie's way, you know, maybe in the company. But in investors, so far I'm too scared to have someone only focus on business plan. So I so much love what I do, that I can purchase the beautiful agave that I see, and even if there's, you know, the expensive because it's the top quality, I don't mind, because I have that pleasure to process it. So this is how I came back in Mexico, producing tequila, and finally was doing that brand K23. So sorry, it was more than 1 minute. The work in summary.
It's so much more than 1 minute. Like the only person who could have spoken for longer is our mutual friend, Jean-Sebastien Robiquet. He would go for like half an hour. Let's rewind a little bit, Sophie. Engineering was your study. What kind of engineering? Was it chemical engineering?
So it's a biochemical, basically. So exactly the degree I have is in biology, but distillery, I was going to say, an engineer school that it's in France that has the same organization as has been told, like in the US, where we can choose like what we want to study. So we do ourselves our calendar, it has to fit, and we can choose what we want to do. And I was, as I entered, first I wanted to do marine biology. I was passionate about oceanography. I thought I would work on this spiruline, which is this beautiful algae that has a lot of protein. So I did two practice in research center in oceanography. Actually, I did a discovery in one of those. So I had the door open to do, you know,
Jacques Cousteau shit.
Yeah, well, I was very lucky to do that discovery. When you do a mistake, and you write it down and something weird happens, it's usually how you make a discovery. And this is what happened. I was curious to see how my microalgae would die. It didn't die. So it was like, oh, something is happening there. So it was fascinating. So that's why I didn't enter the engineer school saying, I want to do that. And they say, we don't do that here. I was, well, this is what I want to do. Is there a way? And they say, well, then you take different, you do a different ways than others. That's why I did choose biology. I did choose chemistry. I did choose medical images engineering in order to study the maps of how, where the algae, blah, blah, blah. So that I had the chance to have that. It's an amazing school, and that I could really do many different topics, see different topics. That said, and then a lot of things, it's by practice. So also when I was in South Africa, there was two bosses, one French, one South African, and they sent me to see the brandy production in France. And to learn with, brandy producers, and one of them in distillation is a mentor to me, because he was, Sophie, drop your notebook and just smell, feel, and, you know, this is how process is working and distillation also is working, or anything is working. It's not only about numbers. So always trust your feelings. And we were calling him the wise man, and he's really someone I often think of him, and I really deeply thank him for that. To not only, you know, do a distillation and check temperature, degrees, blah, 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 or proof, you know, it's more than this.
So let's zoom back a little bit more. Where did you grow up in France?
I did grow in north of France, in a little town called Tourcoing. And the houses in front of my parents' house, or where I did grow until I went to the engineer school, were in Belgium. So I was exactly at the border, the last house of France, and the other side of the road was Belgium.
Amazing.
To me, it was the most normal thing, you know. I didn't even realize until maybe, you know, 10 years ago that it was, you know, like something weird. So when I was young, the closest bakery was in Belgium, and I was going by myself with my little money thing, with the Belgian money, because at that time euro was not existing. Uh-huh. And, you know, so it was.
I mean, I hate to bring it up. We're talking about agave, but you grew up in the Geneva distilling area of France, where you can still legally make Geneva, and they make some very beautiful ones there.
Yeah, at that time, I would say that we've never seen, it was not maybe the common things, it came after. It was really beers, And so I did grow up, well, whenever it was the time that I could enjoy the bitterness of beer. Because I remember that being 15 years old, my uncle made me taste, and I was like, ah, hate it. As anyone, I was loving when I was young, the wine. I was allowed to put a little finger in, and tasting, because my grandparents were living in Bergerac, so with amazing wines around. Or we had this fermented, grape juice. So there was a lot of all this flavor when I was traveling. But from north of France, it was mainly beers, Belgian beers, which are beautiful. It's still my preference today. The smells of all of this has been something that my parents thought I had a trouble when I was young. I have that habit to smell the top, the top of my hands, because we have little hairs on it, and it grab smells of what you touch. If you do gardening and you smell that part of your hand after that, if you've been touching geraniums, which have a very particular smell,
Yes.
or tomatoes leaves. We don't eat them, but it's so lovely to smell. So I was always like smelling it. Like it smells to me is one of my is my preferred sense. Well, I don't know what it is to. No, I would not say that. I think being blind must be very difficult. So I've never. Yeah, maybe I prefer to not be able to. Yeah, I don't know. Smells are beautiful. So it's yeah. I think
But
it's
what?
complicated. I think everything is necessary, but what I mean is smells are amazing.
That we can all agree the smells are amazing, but we're trying to track your journey to agave, and it really started in college, university. So where did you go to university?
So I first did 2 years after my bachelor's to it was their biology diploma, and I entered the engineer cursus like a shortcut. I didn't have to do the 5 years in that engineer school because I had a good recommendation and good marks, let's say, to be able to enter directly to the third year in engineer school. So at that point, still nothing of agave. Was only in north of
But
France, it's
where did
potatoes.
you study? You went from the north of France. The north is very different to Paris, is very different to the south. So you went from there to where?
Compiègne, which is in Oise, 80 kilometers north of Paris.
Oh, okay. So you're close to the center. And then you went to South Africa. Many people don't know, but.
Before that, before South Africa, I did finish my engineer school studies. I needed to have a 6 months work, real final work somewhere in a company or in a research center to validate the diploma. And this is when I did go to Mexico City. So I did discover Mexico in 98 as a visit to the country to visit France. And I really love the country, but I could only say, buenos dias, buenas noches, and gracias at that point. And then I took as a third language Spanish in my engineer school, because I did English, German, and then it was Spanish to have the basics. And then to end my engineer school, then I chose to do that training period in a research center in Mexico City, in the Polytechnic School of Mexico City, in yeast and active bacteria. So white coat,
Interesting.
sterile condition, not as fun as tequila, atmosphere, or even yeah, it's really like in a closed laboratory, but it's fascinating also. It's experimenting. You have an idea, and you have to prove, if it's not, if it's wrong, if it doesn't work, or if it works, then it opens to you new doors about how to continue to experiment. Because research, what is not correct. You have a feeling of what is correct, but it's only an idea. And you have then to make sure what you understood it is really what it is. And it's a never-ending process. It's what is fascinating about research.
Science is a process of investigation. But returning to South Africa, many people might not know that huge amounts of agave were grown in South Africa, and there have been attempts going back 20 years to make agave spirits. They have now new life in these attempts. I have a nice South African spirit in my cupboard right now. It was probably unthinkable when you were there. So I want to talk about how you came to Mexico, founded your business, started Cave Antitres. But what do you think of the agave spirits coming out of South Africa now? And indeed, agave spirits from other places. I've got a nice one in my cupboard as well, which is from Goa in India.
Yes, and there's some now from, I know that's a project in Australia where I was invited to join, but the thing is that already in Mexico, it's complicated to do everything. I already have like 5-6 hours sleep and not even finishing my list, you know? So going into a new project, I'm really like, I would love, but it's for maybe another life, or let's see. But yeah, there's from South Africa. So yeah, South Africa, Australia, in South US also. Yes, so Mexico is a country that has the largest amount of variety of agave in the world. It's around 200 species. So obviously we have this amazing agave portfolio, I would say, from Mexico, with Bacanora, Sotol, Raicilla, Tusca, and obviously Mezcal, Tequila. And so you have all these in some pueblos, in some villages, they had a name that's always used, and now they're maybe trying, or they're trying to register it as a denomination of origin. And I would say, like, for example, when I arrived in South Africa in 2000, there was agave there for 100 years already. So some people brought agave there because lands are like, you never see how it finishes. You know, it's you can see all around you, it's one person lands. So they have a lot of fields. And it was someone brought it saying, well, when there's a disease, for example, with food for cattle, mm-hmm. agave is very resistant and you can give it to ostriches. So that's why these fields were there, not taken care of. And in 2000, it's when there was a shortage in agave in Mexico. So that has been like all over the world, people knew about it. And someone saw these agaves from South Africa and say, hey, these are agaves. Why don't we do something with it? So to come back to your question, I think that if there's native agaves that are great, that have the sugar content to be able to produce an agave spirit, obviously, it's not a patented thing that it can only be done in Mexico. So I think it's great. And each of them should be renowned for its specificity, you know, and its terroir, its way of producing, and make it a unique spirit. So I am totally summed up to that.
So, going from where you grew up, where you went to college, meeting Julio Bermejo, perhaps the most disorganized man in the world, and then visiting him, but was...
And the biggest heart to, and the best to connect people, I would say. So maybe it's this disorganization that he admits himself also make him so, connected to what is important, to, you know, everything. It doesn't have so much, you know, sense that having someone in front of you, creating a connection, and do you know that person and that person? So yeah,
well, Julio is great at that, but let's admit, by his own admission, he's a mess. But when you went to visit him in San Francisco at Tommy's Mexican restaurant in Richmond, San Francisco, amazing place. Was this your first experience of a place that made cocktails?
Yes.
Right. So you came in at the top. You had Julio Bermejo, I think, make you maybe your first fucking margarita. That's amazing.
Yes, and I even had the chance that who came for me at the airport, because Julio was very busy at Tommy's, is his father, Thomas.
Wow.
So they were, you know.
Wow.
So I went out there, the arrival of San Francisco, my first time in the US, and this amazing man opened his arm and said, "Sophie, welcome to America," with a beautiful America, you know?
America.
So, yes, Thomas Barmejo, so that's why the name Tommy's is coming from. And yes, so it was my first cocktail and today. And I think it's because it's the most delicious cocktail, not only because it was my first one, but today I still really... The cocktail, you know, you asked me, the last cocktail I want to drink before I pass away will be a Tommy's. Really, I love it. And so, because in France at that time, or in South Africa, it was not a cocktail culture at all.
No, and, not at all.
Yeah, not at all. So, you know about it, yes.
However, I want people to understand who you are. You are a qualified scientist, an entrepreneur, and you moved to Mexico. And did you already have a contract to be a consultant? Did you move there and set up your company? How did it exactly happen?
I arrived because I met, when I was in the US, in 2001, I met some people, you know, blah, 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 and I explained what I was doing in South Africa. Then they knew that, because when we spoke about Mexico, they knew I was knowing the country and the language because I worked in that research center before. And when I was in South Africa, I received also, a call saying how we would really want you to help us. In the production, there's a difference in consistency, and it's not easy for us to understand why, etc. Well, can you help us? And first I said, well, you know, it was, I still have this, I was loving what I was doing in South Africa. So I first said no. But then after a year and a half being again alone in South Africa, and you know, it's, I made South African friends, but it's, I think I'm a very sociable person, and at one point I like to meet different kind of people. And being in a city in the Desolation Valley, that's the name of the valley I was living in. So it's in a big scale between Johannesburg and Cape Town, so really in the middle of the nowhere in the Karoo. Well, yeah, I thought I will not be able to live more time, you know, in that small city, even if I'm so thankful for the people there to have welcomed me, making me feel, you know, as home as possible. So it was an amazing experience, but a year and a half was great. So after, when the thing with the distillery were great, then it was like, okay. And also in the distillery, to be honest with you, there was not a vision, there was not that vision that we could produce something unique. It was more, let's make what a market is expecting as an agave spirit. And at that time, so it was obviously tequila. So the aim was to make that agave, South African agave spirit, be as similar in a process, as tequila. And I was saying, no, we should, you know, in the US, I could see bartenders smelling and, you know, enjoying what they have in their glass. So even if it's, you know, very different, I think we should go that way. And, you know, not try to shorten up or the taste of what we were doing to make it maybe less tasty. So closer to tequila. So that's something that, yeah, at one point I was not maybe also feeling, you know, it was not as appealing as it was before. So then I said, yes, I love Mexico. And again, let's go back there for 6 months and work on that project. And working there, then there was another opportunity who did open. And at one point, one of the distilleries could not export. And because there was a trouble with the paperwork, the annual declaration, etc. And then I was, you know, like we are used like in the engineer school. Okay, problem, solution. What do we need to make an exportation? Okay, this company cannot do it. What is the cost of doing another company? Okay, let's do it. So I really did the company, not with the business thoughts. My father is a teacher, my mom a nurse. Well, they are retired now, but they knew how much they would earn at the end of their life. So I have nobody in my family doing business. I didn't know what was business at that time, you know, just resolving problems. So I did the company almost 21 years ago just to resolve a problem. And then I was like doing this experiment on the side because of what I was doing in South Africa, playing with yeast. I was doing it also in Mexico, doing samples. And it's when, you know, people from the industry said, and it's what I was seeing at the beginning, wow, you should do something with that.
What I think many people who have heard of you and they've heard of Caio Vinte3, they don't know that, you know, you have a day job and your company. I mean, the last time I talked to you about this, I think you had 4 staff. Tell me about the company now, what it is and what you do.
Yes, so it's still a very small and very efficient company because, again, funds are very limited. Everything we earn, since day one, everything we earn is reinvested. And I'm, you know, I have a very simple car. I travel in economic. Even when I was pregnant 7 months and a half, I did travel in economy over the Atlantic. So 11 hours seated. Maybe that was not the best idea, but I really want to spend the money in what for me is my passion. So being able to produce, you know. So we are, we are six people, six person in the company, including me full time. And then we have someone for, you know, 10 hours per week for social media. Not more because, maybe that sounds weird to say that, but I would love to develop more like a human way of communicating rather than social media. So I try to be honest with myself. And if I do believe that, I need to apply it to my company, not putting all the communication in social media, just what is needed, but then to try to do other way. Like planning a trip in Mexico where I do share the Mexico I love with my team. And it's creating something different. So the company is, yes, one person is taking care of logistics, one person of purchasing and follow up with providers, one person in finances, there's 2 people half time that are in production. I have a manager not to cover that because when I'm at the distillery, I don't check emails or phone. And she's fantastic to follow up on, you know, topics. We just have a fantastic person that many, many people from the industry know, Gianfranco Spada, joining the company to help me, you know, having and to be better than me, to connect with markets and explain what is the brand. Because communication and contact with distributor is the last thing, unfortunately, in the list, because first you need the production to be done, then you need the company to run, and then you can be more in touch, right? So and then an external accountant, and that's it.
But this is all about your tequila brands, Caio Vinte3. But I was actually asking about like your consultancy company where you help, you know, distilleries to be better, right? That was the first thing when you came to Mexico, and it builds on your background. A lot of people will go to, you know, big events, Tales of the Cocktails. They might see you maybe a little less now than recently. And they have great fun with Sophie and have shots and dancing. I saw you for 1 second at Bar Convent Berlin. But the day job is actually helping distilleries in Mexico solve their problems. Yes?
That was the starting point. But since that was a very starting point, because when I could be able to produce, when, you know, the K23 was ready 2 years after I did the company. So in 2005, K23 was born. So 18 years ago, it's going to turn 19 soon.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And from that time, it was the main focus. And the two other projects, but that was not then consultancy. It was more like co-working, or I don't know how to say that. When I had the brand ready, well, there was two other projects with Ocho and Excelia. So when I did the, when K23 was ready, I met Thomas Estes in a tour, actually came with Julio and with other people. So I could meet all of these fantastic people. And Thomas heard about Kaye and he said, "Ah, I would like to do an interview of you." So we set an appointment in Guadalajara. And so I took the bottle out of my bag to make a tasting and speak to him about it, about the brand. And when he saw the bottles, he was like, "Wow," like, it seemed amazing. And he took out of his bag a paper, a drawing from a designer who designed the first ideas of Ocho. And because he was surprised, because it was two numbers. Ocho also had some red color and, like a more modern design. So it was so funny. And that's why from day one, we called ourselves Calle Ocho, brother and sister. And it has been like, beautiful, and still, you know, it's still very close to me. Beautiful agave friendship, tequila. He has been a mentor about, the way to, about life, about connection to people also, but he's a mentor to so many people, but yeah, I could speak for hours about him. A lot of people after thought, I did the interview. He did the interview of me. And then I said, anything you need from me, let me know. It should be all right. So then I was about to launch Cahiers and I received this phone call saying, we need some help because it's difficult to find, bottles and I don't know what to choose. And so I said, but Thomas, now I'm ready to launch. I don't have the time I had 6 months ago.
Right.
And he was like, okay, I understand. And then we hung up. And then I was, it's not possible to do that to Thomas. He's such an, so after a few days, I called him back and said, I thought about it. Then let's do it. I can make a pause on launching Cahiers because I cannot do two things at the same time as well. Let's make Ocho starting. And then I can launch Kali. And so this is what happened. So many people then said, for example, Kali did copy Ocho because the design is the same, the bottle is the same. But we know both me, our Ocho family and me, that it was not the case. But, I let people speak. At the end, you waste energy. The important is to feel straight with yourself, always. I do believe a lot in if you do things great will happen to you.
There's a saying in English, Sophie, no good deed goes unpunished. You generally don't understand that until you're 90.
No, exactly. You could see my face.
Until you're 30. But with Ocho, did you help out with the liquid?
So the liquid has always been produced by Carlos Camarena. Mm-hmm. And I was then spending for years, maybe at least 1 day or 2 days per week in Arandas. And it was basically organizing all the, filling of barrels and also, all the organization of, the dry goods, the delivery, the bottling, checking the profile, Because I was trying not to say too much, but Thomas was okay. How it is, you know? I was like, delicious. I'm sending you the sample now. So it was so quite. So it was more like I would say on that side, it was not so much about liquid. It was more like making that all the coordination and making from the production of Blanco, then all the bottles available in every kind of category around the world with all the different labels, managing the quantity of labels.
Oh, yeah.
So organizing all of that with LSEC sheets and all the inventory. So, and I love, to be honest, I love to organize things like this.
Yes.
So it was, yes, that has been a lot of work. It was the worst project to coordinate, to be honest. But once it was rolling well, then it's magical.
Let's talk about
and then some ideas then was quite great, like keeping a library of the Ocho or the 888 actually was an idea. I said to Thomas, we have to do that. The Ocho years, etc. So that things, you know, we were then playing with concept because playing with Ocho concept was great. So it was, but yeah, the main minds there are Thomas Estes and Carlos Camarena. They are the fathers of Ocho. No doubt at all about that.
Well, the new boss bitch is actually Mrs. Duff. I don't know if you know, but my wife, Elaine, is now the advocacy director for Samson and Surrey. So she is in charge of the 10, 12 ambassadors for Ocho all around the world. And she's the boss.
Nice. That's why we see Ocho blooming even better than before, you know. So nice.
I think so.
Congrats to her.
I think so. But let's talk about the second worst decision of your life. The first worst decision was coming on this podcast, but the second worst one, of course, was starting your own brand, right? You come from an engineering background, and I went to university with a lot of engineers. Engineers are very straightforward people. There's a hole, let's fill it, right? There's a river, let's build a bridge. They don't ask if anybody wants a bridge. So Caillavanti Tres is a superior product. Tell me about how you started it and grew it and where you are now. Because agave now is not the same as even 5 years ago, let alone 20.
Exactly. My first wish, as I thought first it will be for friends and family, was obviously to do the best juice as possible. And eyes closed, I could give any bottle to family, friends, or the Pope, or anybody that would be in front of
the Pope,
me.
The Pope is well known for his tequila preferences, yes.
Well, at that time, I don't know, when I started, I don't remember who it was. Or, you know, the Dalai Lama, I don't think it was tequila, but that's, you know. Anyway, so it was producing, yes, and expressing the character of agave from the highlands, because starting from, you know, from the beginning, it was difficult because I had to build brick by brick from the beginning. So nobody before started it, so I had to start from scratch. But the great thing was to be able to then build that the way, you know, I was feeling I would love to do. Not because it would be the best. I'm not saying that Highland is better than Valley or from other state or from other spirit. But it's, you know, very personal preferences. So I was loving this agave from the Highland, with, you know, fruity notes and citrusy notes. So it was really putting that in a bottle. And that's why I put an agave, and I love the red colors. It was a red agave on the bottle to express that it's, yeah, this agave and Mexico encapsulated in a bottle. And I wanted to make it affordable. That's why from day one, because when you start a brand, you have a liquid and you can decide. Is it going to be, you know, in an easy going packaging using line bottle, so you basically what you sell is a liquid inside the bottle, or you are going with a fancier bottle and you can make much more margin, you know, so it makes your life easier. But for whom you want to produce that? So it's a question I had to ask to myself at the first time, you know, because you know the liquid, you know your liquid. But then the dress around it, you can choose a, you know, a very daily dress or a night, a beautiful, sparkling dress. But it's still the same person inside. So, and my decision has been for the daily dress. Because again, I was, okay, I'm living far away from my family, from friends. When I arrived in Guadalajara, I knew zero person. So to find an apartment, it was like, oops. Took the map and it was like, ew, you know, where shall I go? So I asked a friend from Mexico City to give me, to find someone that they would know and could advise me. But it was really, I arrived with nobody, I knew nobody. So being away, it was not easy. In the first 10 years, I think I was about to drop the project, I don't know, 30 times, 40, 50 times. You know, crying, like big troubles and like, it's impossible, or being told I was a woman, I couldn't do it, or, you know, having lack of money to go ahead, or troubles that you have to carry on your own. Well, any entrepreneurs have that. Obviously, I'm not the only one and I'm not special for that at all. But yes, not being in your country was sometimes I was, yeah, on Sunday, working and thinking what I'm doing in front of your computer, you know? I'm, you know, 20, I started the company, I was 20, the day after my 26th birthday. So after that, I was at my 30th birthday, for example, being alone on a Sunday, you know, and you're like, what are you doing of your life? You know, come on, go out. And but yeah, I don't know which bees have been biting me to still follow it, or maybe I'm too stubborn, I don't know, maybe. But yes, so to come back to the brand, it was a decision of putting it so in a casual dress, and it's still what I love to do with the original range, is to be able to share the best possible product, being affordable, so in a bottle that I love, but you know that I don't have to pay mold or I don't have to pay super expensive, because to me the most important is the liquid. And where do I see now where I want to, you know, to the passes we want to walk on. It's super, it's amazing and very, it's fascinating to walk these new fields. So with the Criollo, we've been experiencing that. So Caimete Tres Criollo is a tequila using, obviously, blue agave. We can only use blue agave for tequila. But using that blue agave seed or called Criollo, which is even very mature, the plant will not grow bigger. And nobody before has only used that one to produce a tequila. So it was something new when doing it. I was not knowing at all what it will give. Once it went out of the sea, it was like, wow, it was amazing. So I even did harvest, you know, the rest of the field because it was fantastic. And from there, it has been really like a new oxygen refill to follow, because to follow, you know, this, you know, you could say after 21 years, you may be bored, but with all these new projects, obviously, it's impossible to be bored. We've just done the 20 years anniversary of the company in 2023. And obviously 2023 with a number was a special year. And so for this one, for example, we have done three different tequila from three different areas, from three different terroirs. So highlands as usual, lowland, and from Guanajuato state. And then blend them in different percentage. So finding the right balance between them so they would get, you know, complement each other. And having a unique liquid. And for this one, I thought, okay, what I want for the anniversary is to thank bartenders. Because without bartenders, Cahiers would not exist at all. We've never invested money in a marketing campaign or in a PR. We could never pay a plane ticket to a bartender, unfortunately, because we don't have that money. And that said, we are still in the best trending brands voted for from bartenders. So for me, it's like, wow, you know, we couldn't give them more and they still, you know, love us so much. For me, it's like the best gift ever. So that's why that special tequila that cost us more to produce, to do, and everything, it has the same price as our original Blanco. And we did hide 2 bottles of this in our original Blanco case, because I wanted to make sure that we really go in the hands of bartenders and not only in a liquor store shelf and everyone that can get it, they get it. So I'm asking my distributor to first sell this case, so it's the same price. So it's not, you know, the bar can get it the same price and have these two special gift bottles. Well, the gift is the extra price that we spent, but they don't have to spend themselves and have it. So it was an idea, you know, that I had looking in the field, like how to make it happen, you know, to from Mexico to give it to any bartenders in the world. So the ideas like this, it's what made me wake up super happy every morning. We just did also a 4-liter jars, so using less glass. So one of the jars of 4 liters equals to almost 6 bottles. So one case of 70 cl can be replaced by 1 bottle of recycled glass, you know. So ideas like this is what, yeah, is my, yeah, I said it already, I'm not going to repeat it. It's like that's for me, and I think it's the future also of the tequila industry to continue to experiment. And many brands are doing it, and that's super great, super cool, because it's great for the full industry of tequila and for the consumer most of all.
Well, I think people are experimenting and celebrities are doing stupid things just because agave spirits are really popular. Like, you don't hear about celebrities doing stupid things with Dutch Geneva because the category, you know, essentially is not growing. I always say, I feel like I'm, with my incredibly amazing Geneva, I'm selling 100% blue agave tequila in 1982 and no one's interested, right? That's where we are. But
well, you still have to wait so some years and it will come there.
Hey, I'm the Carlos fucking Camarena of 100% malt Geneva. But to go back to where you are, but to come back to where you are, Sophie, there's many brands out there. There's a lot of money out there pushing it. There are other good brands. Your pricing is very good. But how do you support this community that loves Caille 23? Do you go and visit them? Do you go to bar shows? Like, how have things, you know, how do you support them?
Yes, so I do go to bar shows, not all of them, because time is missing, even if I would love. So it's a great opportunity to see distributors and bartenders not having to travel so much. I have this, I'm very concerned about environment. It's something also very personal. I'm not judging anyone, obviously, and I'm taking planes, obviously, to travel. I do as much as I can bus and train, but sometimes it's not possible.
Of course.
So I did travel also, you know, for my work, you know, for the past 20 years, I really feel I need to leave opportunity to other people, to young people to travel more. So I decided before COVID to travel less. And I did advise from social media that I will not travel so much. So at that point, people said, yeah, you're crazy. It will never work and you cannot work remotely. For that, COVID for me was a blessing, because when I was offering to have virtual meeting to distributors, they were like, no, you better come. And so for me, it's fantastic because now I can do it, because I do think that for meetings, you know, virtual meetings are not the same, but it can avoid many travel. And when I can, I try to visit, well, I put in my calendar to visit, you know, markets. And I love it. For me, it's not work. It's sharing what I love. I wanted to be also, my first dreamt job was to be a biology ecole teacher, a teacher of biology. So I love to share the, you know, humbly what I know, what I've been explained, what I could experiment. So this is what I love. So last month I could go to Belgium, for example, and it was fantastic. And I love to speak about tequila in general or agave spirit in general. And that just say what is particular of Cali, but I love to speak about the category. That's in Mexico and what we do here. I think I forgot maybe the original question, sorry.
Even before you started, in agave, it is on a global boom such as never been seen before. And tequila used to be cool. As I repeat in these episodes, there are a whole group of people coming up. They don't live in Brooklyn. They live in Bushwick in Brooklyn. They're 25 years old and they've never tasted tequila. Their first agave was mezcal. So do you think that that opens the door? Mezcal is clearly now established, but for the other ones, the Ricea and Bacanora and Pops and, you know, Sotol, even though Sotol is not an agave.
Totally. I think there's beautiful bridges between the different category. At the beginning, you know, when, at the beginning, the mezcal bloom, people tend to put like tequila and mezcal as, you know, the cousins that don't like each other. And like greedy or jealous, I would say, like jealousy between but you know, he's driving a big car, he's So it was the same. So mezcal would say from tequila, it's very industrial, etc. And from tequila, it was, well, they don't get what we do. There's a passion behind also and why they would criticize. So and then it was great to see that the it was to realize better we are on the same boat. We are all in a boat of beautiful agave spirit. And that's why I would also include, you know, the other one from the other country, as you said. It's different, but it's different. It's another, no, let's say that in another word. It's another boat or different boats, but like would help each other to cross an unknown, you know, ocean, or, you know, to help each other if there's a need. And it's what we do. When I start, you know, master classes, I always mention about the other kind of agave spirit because I think it's good for everyone. And now, thanks to you, I may add the world. So different countries also making agave spirit. Now, let's come to Mexico and let's see different agave spirit inside. Let's go down then to tequila when I have to speak about tequila. So I really think it's bridges. And I could hear also people who started with tequila and then said, well, no, mezcal then is the best. And now they're like, okay, it's good, but I came back to tequila also, and now I love both. Because there's days I want to sip a mezcal and get all these beautiful notes of different agave and the smokiness and all the complexity of mezcal. And some days I really love to have the straightforward agave and the terroir from the agave from my glass. And I think it's great like this. So it's, mood, decision, judging what other people are drinking or just, that's interesting, you're tasting that and not, why do you only drink that? Or, you know.
Well, I spoke to my friend Danny, who, you know, buys and bottles these incredible mezcals under her brand, Gota Gorda. And living in the U.S. is the best. It's the best place in the world to live outside Mexico because we are getting top-notch, great quality mezcal at very reasonable prices, right? The initial mezcal industry in America and everywhere else was shit. It was the worst mezcal, right? We can agree that. And then Ron Cooper started bottling and selling these incredible mezcals, but they were all $120, $150, $200 a bottle. Everyone loved them. Nobody could use them. And then Del Maguey Vida came out, a good quality, yet blended, essentially, mezcal. Now, if I walk two blocks to my liquor store, West Coast Wines, Lexington Avenue, I can get Siete Misterios Doble Edge, which is a great mezcal, for $36. So does that reflect all the work and labor of the people behind it? Does Del Maguey reflect that? Well, that's a question. So when I asked Danny, her mezcals are $80 a bottle and up. And she's like, well, look, this is a luxury product. We have to reflect it. On the other hand, the people who produce this, the mezcaleros, the tequila producers, they're participating in capitalism. You put your product out there, people pay for it, etc. So what, if I may, do you think, Sophie, we should pay for a nice bottle of Blanco tequila in New York City, or indeed a nice bottle of mezcal, or should we just let the market decide, which is the current situation?
So what do you mean by buying, you mean like the look of the bottle?
No. A spirit should reflect the cost of all the ingredients that go into it. And if you buy tequila or mezcal or Bacanora or Sotol, the cost is actually really low because it's rural Mexico and, you know, these people are earning very little. And they're putting it out in the market and it's being bought. Nobody is making amazing margins. The brand owner, as you know, the importer, the distributor, everybody just makes the standard 30%. But should we pay more for mezcal or tequila, or do we just let the market decide?
Yeah, and when you say about the cost, I do agree with living. And what I could say also is that when you live in Mexico, sometimes you don't realize, you charge basically, or you put your cost for your living here. Even if your living condition should be better, speaking more than anything, for example, for some mezcal producers that don't have health insurance, and they should be the one to, if people enjoy drinking there's amazing mezcal, making sure that if something happened to them, they can actually have a proper operation and not being told, well, let's see how it goes, because it's too expensive to do. Because here we have the IMSS, it's a national, healthcare, and basically you have to wait until you can be taken care of if there's an operation, or someone else has to pay for you, I have many friends who had to sell a car or even a house to pay for their uncle operation who didn't have health insurance. So this is a reality. And in Mexico, this is a deep reality. So that is a very good topic you're raising about making sure that, you will treat someone, the producer, the producer could have the conditions that you would want for your network in another country or to a friend. And then it is a fact that distributor earn more than what we do as producer. So this is it, this is how this is how the system works. And it is then, well, but again, it's everyone's choice. I could decide to change the packaging and then put double price, maybe get out of the market for a couple of years and then come back. So actually, well, the great thing is that special edition is helping to continue to live because during COVID, well, the company was about to stop. And it's still very difficult to be in this market with a competition, as you mentioned, with a competition, with when we had this such high prices of agave 2 years ago, it was, it was a bunch of money in each truck of agave, $30,000 per truck. So you have to, wow. So it's a super weight, to produce it well and, big stress. So having special edition, for example, in our cases, being able to spend more money in packaging also and have that pleasure to work with recycled glass, handmade bottle, and working with women that are soul mother and can produce plagac algae pepper or corn pepper, blah, blah, blah. So that is my pleasure, to also give more to people around thanks to this special edition. But to come back to your question, I think it's a choice of a producer and the market. I don't know if at one point market could say, oh, we want to pay more that brand because we know that the producer doesn't have health insurance. It's complicated, what I think is important. That's convinced about that, and I hope it goes. It answer to your to the question you raised is trust your palate and do blind testing. If you do believe a brand is great and you like it, and it's a $45 tequila compared to the $90 or $100 tequila you usually drink, or $150 or $200 because it has this beautiful nightdress, these can be amazing. I'm not saying they're not good, not at all. But it's not because a tequila would cost less, as you mentioned, that the juice is less good. So it's great to pour and to have below your glass a number, or, you can put stars, flowers, blah, 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 drawing, blah, whatever you want, or letters, but mix the glasses and do your own tasting, and you may have a different answer from the person sitting next to you, and you don't have a wrong answer. Because if your favorite tequila is the lowest price, it's not because you didn't do great your testing, it's because this is a juice you like. And so I would say that the market should focus more about what is inside the bottle and give more power to producers who will then try to push the category in the senses rather than marketing.
Yeah, I asked the same question to Julio Bermejo when he was on this podcast. And there's a kind of a not nice attitude you see sometimes with younger people, large cities in the US, the UK, and they're like, oh, I drink this mezcal, I support T.O. Javier, or I support this brand, they built a school. And Julio said, look, you don't need to do any of that, that white savior, like, oh, the white people are here to help you.
Yeah.
His thing was, buy distillery-owned brands. The money flows back in the community. And he told a story which shocked me. A well-known mezcal, well, not that well-known, mezcal producer, he made a mezcal for an American person who came to Mexico to visit him. And this mezcal producer said, hey, could you order some more cases? I need to make a bit of money. And the guy's like, sure, are you okay? And the guy said, well, it's okay, but my wife's in the hospital, and I have to pay some bills. And the producer found out the bill that had to be paid was $100. And this guy's mezcal sold per bottle for over $100 in the USK, in the USA. So that's kind of where we are. And I do think that doing business, enriching people, is the way to go. And it might start with the local producers don't own the brand, but hopefully it gets there in the end. And you wind up with a situation where you have a Carlos Camarena or something like that.
Yes. And for example, in I totally agree with you. And it's great because then you can invest in your distillery, et cetera, to make, you know, the important is to have your tool to produce and be recognized for that. In my case, for example, unfortunately, I don't have the money to build my own distillery. So what I do is to rent the wall. So if you take the word, it is not a brand with own distillery. It will be, but it's a brand done, you know, with a own process. And so we do rent the wall and bring on own agave. Our own yeast and process, it's our own barrels, even the tanks, stainless steel tank, to be able to rest the tequila, because even the Blanco, I let it rest at least 6 months in a stainless steel tank to let it rest naturally, let the time, and I don't want to be rushed because the distillery will need space. So we did invest in these tanks and to... And there's one that I've been there for 2 years already and a half, that the, you know, the Criollo El Dos, after all the denting barrels, doing the blending, let it rest. So this is a decision taken. But if you look at the registration, I don't own the distiller.
But, of course not.
So, but yeah, so, but I get your point. And I think it is important to see to whom, to not have this meat part that are taking the big piece. And hopefully people know more about it. And I think, you know, like you mentioned Ron Cooper, well, he had made this mezcal producer being known and being able to earn well from their work and develop them. And the important is then for everyone to be fair. And to leave money where you know the value is created, and the value what it is the juice.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think that's where we are with the agave world, because even if the world is full of amazing spirits made by incredible people, it is not full of people who know how to sell them. One of my favorite stories involves your countryman, actually, Sophie, Michel Roux, the creator of Absolute Vodka and Bombay Sapphire, and really the modern creator of Stolichnaya Vodka. I interviewed him several times. Amazing, amazing guy. And he was one of the $5 billion guys. He created billion-dollar brands. And the only other person in New York who did that was Sidney Frank, the American, who imported Jägermeister, which even German people did not drink, and made it a huge brand. And he wanted to create Grey Goose, a luxury French vodka. So he went to lunch with Michel Roux, actually French guy, and he said, I'm going to create a luxury French vodka, and I want you to partner with me. And Michel said, no, that's stupid. Nobody's ever going to drink a French vodka. Mm-hmm. The world is full of amazing craftspeople, but it's not full of amazing salespeople.
Yeah.
Which is something to be respected.
Yes. Well, we cannot do both. Actually, this limited edition I tell you everyone is why do you sell it the same price? This is stupid, you know? It could have helped you so much to sell it, you know, much higher. But so, yes, I do agree with you. Then we cannot have too many caps on our head, right?
Listen, but the reason,
but I'm glad I didn't. I would do it the same, to be honest. But I understand the point of people, you know, that's the funny thing.
No, I mean, the reason the entire world drinks Irish whiskey now is actually because of French people. It's because the Pernod Ricard company at one stage owned all the distilleries in Ireland, and then they made very big bets. It took French people to rescue Irish whiskey. This is something we have to adapt. Like, the country that drank American bourbon when nobody wanted to drink American bourbon, well, the two countries were Australia and Japan. It wasn't America. Americans didn't give a shit. So I want to wrap up, Sophie, and ask you, on a personal level, you moved to Mexico. This is the question I wanted to ask Danny, actually. Big change. You're going in there. Not a perfect command of the language. You're in the distilling world. You're a woman. But also, you have a personal life. Like, what were the first 5 years like compared to the last 5 years?
First 5 years were workaholic and workaholic. And the last 5 years will be workaholic and having two kids and trying to balance doing, well, whenever I can, some music. I play in a batucada band. So it's like the Brazilian, you know, music when you do carnivals, etc. Very happy. And yeah, I love the vibe of that. And I love to swim. So, but sometimes I manage to go once per month in the swimming pool because, and at one point it was like 3 months not touching the water because it's difficult to do everything. So I always, my trouble, I would say that is I always put work first. The kids, obviously, when one is sick, I was happy. Actually, you know, sometimes you doubt about yourself. No, I am a good mother, but no, obviously, they are my priority. When it's needed, when I'm with them, there's no phone. I'm totally connected, but I'm not a usual mother. I calculated last year. I think I've been at least away from them a third part of the year, and they are very young. But as far as the school said to me, we don't know how you do, but they are great. We don't say you're not necessary, but we don't feel that they miss you like this. What I do is I do video of something I see, you know, when I'm traveling, and then the kids can, someone can show that to them whenever it's a great moment too for them. We don't have that goodbye or long moment and heartbreaking thing. And they can see me as happy because I'm taking that when I'm great. And I think for them, it's great to see a happy mom. I love what I do, so I would not do it. I will not be that happy mom. But yes, they don't see me as much as the normal. That's a fact. So yeah, that's the 5 years of balancing this as good as I can. I never feel I do enough in any field. I'm a perfectionist also. So I don't take a lot of resting time. But again, I think that's the reason I chose. That's who I am. And yeah, I learned how to accept that I'm an always running person. Trying not to be too late, but it's great to be in Mexico because when you are late, it's not that bad. Because then, you know, we are all under, you know, it's like, it's when you invite someone and he comes on time, you're like, what? You know, it's not what we're supposed to be, you know? So that's the magic of Mexico, to be honest. It's when this is how it is, but I will not change that for anything.
But what's it like making friends when you move over for the first time and you're living, not in Mexico City, you're living, outside?
You meet people. One of my best friends here, Pancho, who many people from the industry know. I met him. He was a taxi driver first, and we become friends. And then, well, he say that he has came to the industry because of our friendship, but he did it on his own. Well, he's a fantastic person and the best guide you can have when you visit the tequila area. So it's you can search him by Better Call Pancho. On Instagram, I think, yes, but it's fantastic. So we met as, yeah, taxi driver, we discussed in the car. And then, every single person I met was like this, like serendipity. And so I have a very diverse kind of friends, goes from a teacher in criminology to an architect or the person who is helping me, with the cleaning. She became a very close friend also because, she's super talented. And now she's doing more things in the company with us, which is great because she's the best person to do inventories because she's
Right.
organized. She's the best person even to organize a room for tasting. She's super like artistical. So it's not considering people by their degree or even by their career. It's considering people in, like an individual. And you meet someone, you doesn't have to say who he is, and you discover that. That's the way I love to make contact with people. So I don't really mind at all the kind of social level. It's what is behind inside the dress, as we have been saying before, or the costume, for men or short. If it's you're on the beach, like t-shirt and short, like and flip-flop. It yeah, that's so yeah. I'm very pleased that I can call Mexico home. I've been very well, yeah, very well embraced and welcome. So yeah, it's a gift from Mexico and from the Mexican people.
So tell us, what's going to happen, and or what would you like to happen in the next 2 or 3 years for your brand, Calle 23?
Well, it will come back to what we said, that people would taste it for what is inside the bottle. Because I've been told in the US, doing a tasting, and the bartender was loving it in a very beautiful bar in a top roof of Chicago. And at the end, when he asked my distributor, "Oh, so what's the price?" And when the distributor said, I could see the disappointed face, like, "Oh, this is so cheap." And I was like, "Well, if you want to give me more money, you can, Like, he loved it and he was disappointed because of the price. And I was like, "Come on." So, yes, to really do that would be that to that. Yeah, if I can be selfish, I would say that the brand, very. But yeah, I will also. It's not that low, it's very subjective, but I do believe we do produce good juice because we really do it with passion and with the best we can. There's no, not at all. How you say that? There's no money saving on the process and on the quality of the tequila. Never ever. And I'd rather earn zero, but being able to continue than earning more and being like, oh, but yeah, this lot, you should not drink that for tasting. When we earned all the double gold medal at the San Francisco Straight Competition and the best tequila for Criollo, when I said to my distributor in California, well, I didn't even say for what it was, but I said, can you please prepare a pack for with this kind of category? So they picked the bottles from the warehouse. So I didn't know the lot that was chosen. I didn't know the condition of the storage, but these are the bottles that were judged in the San Francisco Spirit Competition. Or we got Chairman Trophy in Ultimate Spirit Challenge, and the same bottles from the warehouse, any bottle that anyone can grab. This is my value. I think, well, my trust. The judgment should be done on a shelf bottle that you can purchase in your liquor store. So that, this is it, yeah. To be that people could see that could see that the work behind the what we want to share in our beautiful bottles. Yeah, that's but again, and discover other brands. I really other brands, other category. I don't want to finish with someone so concentrated because they have amazing things that are produced every day, new projects. And really, I would speak for the category better is really to go for what your palate is loving. If someone gives you a glass, don't ask the price, don't ask what it is. Taste it, you like it, go for it. That would be my prayer. You say that, I pray?
I think the Sophie de Kolbeck t-shirt is go for us. Right? You could have a whole range of Sophie merch. Well, look, this has been amazing. Thank you so very much. I know it's happy hour in Jalisco. You'll probably want to be having some beer to go with your tequila. How can people find you, your company, and Calle 23 online? Social media, all that kind of thing?
Yes. So I hope I will say it right. It's Calle 23 Tequila, so Calle 23, so 23, the number, 2023. Tequila, Tequile. Oh, it's terrible to say letters. And that's for social media. So Calle 23 Tequila. Myself, I'm Sophie de Kolbeck. And we are in 20 countries now. We have a waiting list of 22 countries. So we are opening new countries when we are sure to have enough for the existing market. That is also my respect to the reps people who do an amazing work in the market. So I don't want them to be in lack of product. And in online selling platform, well, as you said before, when I'm not the best to sell. I don't know what to say more than this, but yes. You please contact us on social media and someone will, in the 10 hours per week, will answer to you.
Eventually somebody will reply.
Sophie, eventually. Be patient, please. But no, someone will answer.
This has been so amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for inviting me and for this very good journey in the discussion.
Now it's time for a drink.